Support comes from St. Louis Public Library Foundation, helping the library serve children and their families with programs and services needed to become lifelong readers. More information about the foundation is at slpl.org.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. Much of the wetlands that once existed in Missouri no longer do. In fact, about 90% of them have been lost to agriculture, urban development, and man-made flood control measures. Wetlands native to Missouri include marshes and swamps and the borders of ponds and lakes. And they're important because, among other things, they help to improve water quality. Natural wetlands encompass nearly 1.5% of the state's total land area. Today, artificial wetlands are becoming a promising alternative that emulates the real thing. Producer Alakuziz went to St. Charles County on a hot and windy day last month to visit one of them and brought back this report.
The August A. Bush Memorial Conservation Area in St. Charles County is about 5 times the size of St. Louis's Forest Park, and it's all managed by the Missouri Department of Conservation. This nature reserve has hiking trails, a shooting range, and over 30 lakes. And today, I'm going to visit one of those lakes to check out something called an artificial floating island. I get in a truck with a few conservation agents and we head to Lake 35. Not a very glamorous name, I know, but the lake is special, and we're going to see why. They unload the boat from the trailer and onto the lake's shore. We put on dark gray life jackets and get on the boat.
Quick here in the front.
Water temperature and the air temperature are about the same.
Oh, nice. So if we fall in, it won't be a shock.
Denise Otto, a fisheries biologist with the Missouri Department of Conservation, steers.
Am I good?
After what's just a 3-minute boat ride, we spot our destination that looks like a mini island.
So as you can see, it's like a little dot in this little lake. Oh, we're heading towards it right now. It kind of starts to fall into the background.
Yeah. So we're pulling up to it. It's quite small. Yes.
The floating wetland is about the same size as a king mattress, but instead of a rectangle, its shape is kind of like a blob. It gently glides in the water, just lightly, because it's anchored to the floor of the lake with metal chain ropes. I reach over the boat to touch the base. It feels firm, but kind of rubbery, like playground floor material.
It's a lot more firm than you would think, and it already has these cavities that are pre-drilled, and so that's what we put the plants in.
Even though it's a small surface, there are 70 plants on this floating island. They're all native to Missouri, like foxglove beer tongue, swamp milkweed, and bulrush. And they were chosen because they're good for pollinators and for fish. These green and rose-colored plants are still young, but some of them have started to flower. Once they mature, they'll look really pretty with colorful blooms, bees, and butterflies.
It looks sad now in some ways because it's just getting started, and in July and August July was really hot. But it's alive. Stressed but alive.
On the edge of the floating island, there are some sticks. Mike Engel, a fisheries crew leader with the Missouri Department of Conservation, explains they're there to protect the island.
I guess from here you could see that there are some sticks around the outside, and that's to kind of help try and keep the geese from getting on or other animals getting on and kind of crushing the young plants. So that's just kind of a deterrent. They don't like walking up over sticks to get onto things. So it's just try and, you know, help give the floating wetland a better chance at starting off so they don't get squashed and crushed.
Underwater, there's a metal cage that deters turtles from feasting on the plant's roots. And the roots are really important because they suck up harmful contaminants from the lake and naturally filter the water. Engel cares for this young wetland by watering its plants and pruning them. And every once in a while, he also dons a mask and a snorkel and uses a GoPro camera to check the roots beneath the surface.
We did that about a month ago, maybe, and we saw the roots were through, so we knew it was doing good and nice and healthy. So we haven't checked underneath since then, and it's still doing great, so the roots are still doing good under there.
This mini wetland was installed in Lake 35 in early June as part of the Missouri Department of Conservation's quest to find more ways to improve the water quality in lakes and ponds. Over the past 2 years, the department and its partners have installed about a dozen of these artificial wetlands, most of them in southwest Missouri. This isn't new technology. It's been around for some decades, but Frank Nelson, the wetland systems manager with the Missouri Department of Conservation, wants to put more of these artificial wetlands in the state's public waters and eventually in private hands too.
Thinking about floating islands as just one of those additional tools that we have in our water quality toolbox, and it's one of those things that I thought it might be a good time to see the application and hopefully success here in Missouri. There was definitely a possibility in which, if nothing else, to raise awareness of this option to help clean water and provide a variety of other benefits, whether it's pollinators, diversity, and that sort of thing.
Many lakes and ponds in the Midwest have unnaturally high amounts of nutrients. Think phosphorus and nitrogen that come from fertilizer and agricultural runoff, or toxic heavy metals that come from stormwater. Nutrient excess harms the environment. It causes slimy green and gross-smelling algal blooms. And too much algae is dangerous for fish, aquatic plants, and even humans because it sucks up all the oxygen in the water and releases even more toxins. This causes fish kills in what's known as dead zones. Nelson explains how this happens.
Today in our landscape, water just moves off the land and through our water systems very quickly. And so the natural filter systems aren't there as they would have been historically, i.e. the wetlands themselves. And so we have all this concentration of nutrients that just flow down the pipe all at once. And so that's where we have these issues today with harmful algal blooms and concentration of pollutants.
When it comes to the lakes in neighborhoods or cities, the people who manage those often reach for herbicides to kill the unwanted algae. But that's just a short-term solution. Carla Campbell is a researcher at the Missouri University of Science and Technology in Rolla, and she studies water pollution in urban places. She says using herbicides doesn't get at the root of the problem.
These do get rid of the algae, but it does so using chemicals that are going to be harmful to the ecosystem. And it really doesn't give a long-term solution. You know, it'll make the water look clean. It's going to look like a clean lake. It's not going to have all the green goo growing in it that people don't like to see. So a lot of times, you know, what's out of sight is out of mind. You know, people see it and they don't really think anything about it. And they're like, oh, the lake's not green this summer. It looks so nice. But it's not a long-term solution.
That's where floating wetlands come in as a promising alternative. As native plant roots grow deep into a lake or a pond, they suck up nutrients like phosphorus and naturally filter the water. A real natural wetland does that on a much larger scale. But in Missouri, nearly 90% of the wetlands have been lost to urban development and man-made flood control measures. Artificial wetlands are built to mimic the real deal.
So wetlands are like livers in the landscape. One of the things that your liver does is to help remove toxins from your body. So wetlands will do the same thing for the ecosystems that contain them. So if we can harness that ability that natural wetlands have to help remove pollutants from urban water bodies, that benefits everyone.
There's a lot of research out there about artificial wetlands and their benefits. Campbell ran her own experiments to test how good they are at filtering nutrients and contaminants. To conduct the tests, Campbell used 75-gallon Rubbermaid tanks and filled them with water to recreate a pond. She then added nutrients to pollute the water and put in native plants to mimic a wetland.
As we were adding nutrients to the water, where were the nutrients going? Where were they end up? how are they being transformed? Would they stay in the water? Would they end up in the plants? Would they end up in algae that grew in the tank? Just looking at various things like that. And through all of those, we would make an assessment on how effective the floating treatment wetlands were.
Campbell took samples along the way, and to measure if the wetland was working, she used an oven. And a warning, we're about to get a bit technical here.
So when you're looking at nutrients that are taken up by plants, what you'll do is you will typically take an entire plant. You will then take it to the lab, measure it, weigh it, just to get the information on it right when you harvest it. Then you will put it into a drying oven and dry it between 60 and 80 degrees Celsius until the weight is constant, so it's lost all its moisture. Then what you do is you grind up the plant into a fine powder, and then you basically assess the chemistry of the plant so you can detect the amount of nitrogen and the amount of phosphorus that are in the dried tissues of the plant.
Campbell recently wrapped up her experiment and is in the process of publishing the results. She found that the floating wetlands appear to suppress algae growth. In other words, the water became cleaner. It's good news, but Campbell is still cautious about her results.
That's definitely a positive result, but what you have to keep in mind is that results from small-scale experiments such as this are difficult to scale up to a full-size pond in theory.
Scale really matters. If a lake is too big and a floating wetland too small, the native plants won't be able to make a big enough difference in the water quality. There would just be too many toxins and nutrients and not enough wetland power to remove them all. Large lakes or ponds may need several artificial wetlands to really work. While we were on the boat visiting the artificial wetland on Lake 35, Denise Otto, the fisheries biologist with the Missouri Department of Conservation, explained that there are plenty of small ponds that could really benefit from these structures.
These wetlands are designed for lakes that are right around 1 to 1.5 acres to really improve water quality, and that's a lot. There's a lot of landowners that have smaller ponds that struggle with water quality issues. They struggle with unwanted or nuisance plants. It just goes back to a key nutrient, which is usually phosphorus or nitrogen, and it's just a matter of who's going to use it. If a floating wetland is using it, then you don't have things like algae that are using it.
There is another drawback. The upfront cost can be high. The floating wetland at the Bush Conservation Area is about $2,000. The Department of Conservation purchased it from a Minnesota-based company called Biohaven, which is one of the only U.S.-based companies that sells this kind of eco-friendly solution. The cost can put off a lot of people. Still, Otto says this natural treatment is worth the investment.
Yeah. HOAs or subdivisions might get sticker shock when they first look at a small wetland and see that it's almost $1,800, and then you have the cost of shipping. But some herbicides can be a couple hundred dollars, but then there's other herbicides that are over $2,000 a gallon. And you're fighting these plants year after year after year. So then you have to do a cost-benefit analysis and think maybe it actually is cheaper to get a wetland to get to the root of the problem. Because when you're treating with herbicide, you are really treating this symptom, which is the unwanted plant growth. You're not getting to the root cause, which is excess nutrients. And that's what a floating wetland gets to.
Otto and others with the Department of Conservation want to spread the word about floating wetlands to more private landowners and homeowner associations. The department is also designing its own plastic-free model. In the U.S., all the commercially available floating wetlands are made of plastic. And Frank Nelson, the wetland systems manager, worries that plastic particles from the wetland's base could break down and further disturb the environment. They're still tweaking the design, and when it's ready, he plans to share the blueprints with university students who could manufacture it and make artificial wetlands accessible to more people in the state.
It's kind of all under development right now, but looking for opportunities to partner and to lower the hurdles, whether it's for construction itself, and so that these could become more available to, municipalities, HOAs, individuals, the whole spectrum.
Carla Campbell, the researcher at Missouri S&T, is also excited about the possibility of more private landowners acquiring floating wetlands. She says it's even possible to DIY it and for people to build their own floating filters.
We had one person down here at the university who was assisting with the project just a little bit. And he goes, oh, well, this might be neat to put in the pond out on my farm. And I was like, oh, absolutely. And I think the reason they're suitable for, you know, any pond in any urban setting is just because it's a very low risk intervention. You know, you're using plants. Plants grow everywhere, you know, and I think as long as you use native plants, I think it's difficult to go wrong, you know, even if the project doesn't turn out exactly the way you want it to.
Just before we got off the lake in St. Charles County, Mike Engel, the fisheries crew leader, spotted two pieces of trash. It looks like a styrofoam drink cup and an empty bag of chips. He gets off the boat to pick them up.
There's a wrapper or something on the ground below the seat there, too.
If everybody was as messy as some, this place would look a lot different. Mm. So most of the time, everybody's pretty darn considerate.
About 300,000 people visit the Bush Conservation Area every year, so there's bound to be some trash. It's a good reminder that excess nutrients aren't the only type of pollution in the environment. And with the floating wetland installed in a prominent lake among these thousands of acres, Otto says she's excited more and more people might learn about the solution. Frank Nelson agrees.
Nature isn't just out there, but it's in our neighborhoods. It's in our little park ponds, or if you have a favorite fishing pond, it can be right there as well. And so, you know, I think that's Missouri Department of Conservation's mission is to kind of help folks see that nature's all around them, and it's beneficial for us, and likewise, we have responsibilities to be beneficial for nature itself.
Floating wetlands are just one piece of the larger water quality puzzle. They're not going to bring back Missouri's largely destroyed wetland system or put a stop to water pollution altogether. It's just one relatively small natural remedy, and an important one that when combined with other environmentally friendly practices can make a big difference.
That was producer Aula Kuziz reporting. Today is Aula's last day as a reporter or a producer on our show. She was with our team full-time this summer, and we couldn't be more grateful for her dedication, passion, and fantastic work. Aula started as an intern with our show in May 2023. Since that time, she's also helped out on newscasts and assisted with the special mini-season of STLPR's podcast, We Live Here. Aula's in her final year at St. Louis University. It's honestly hard to believe that she's still in college. She's done pro work. She's also taught me and the rest of our team many lessons about poise, collaboration, and grace. This isn't a goodbye, however. Aula isn't going far. She'll be working in other parts of our newsroom until the end of the year. And we're grateful for that, and looking forward to seeing whatever she chooses to do after graduation. Get it, Aula.
Today's segment was produced by Aula Kuziz.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.